You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. The first day of the 2020 presidential campaign. Welcome. Yeah, hope you're ready for that. Elections. Big day in the United States yesterday. Hope you voted. I did. Kind of a computerized thing, right? Display had this wheel on it. I figured it out. So, mixed bag of news. I want to talk about the news before I get too far into the program. So, I'll do that right now. And what we're going to do today is kind of weave in and out of different coverage that I will monitor here in the control room, yeah, and bring to you. I want to hear what different people have to say. We're going to see if at some point Nancy Pelosi ought to be speaking. So I'm and I know if you're a conservative, we know what happens, right? Wall Street likes split houses, right? Because you get nothing. That's right. So the markets react favorably to it. That means nothing's going to happen with the tax cut, which they're okay with. Stability, yeah, in split houses. So Wall Street reacted, or failed to react, which means they've already discounted it and they're okay with it. A couple things that stand out about the media. One, you know, one of the things I love about doing the show is I think the truth is important. I think people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, I think people should know that I'm not sure they could tell the truth if you walked up and, like, hit him in the face with a baseball bat and said, okay, report that. And they would say, a strong wind just blew through the studio. No, no. Second time. That's a baseball bat. Gale force winds blew through. You know, I just don't think. And I talk about newstainment, okay? It's not about the news. It's not about the truth. It's an ideological spin that taints everything. And then it's kind of masqueraded out as quote-unquote news. So you had hosts that appear on Fox that go out on a campaign stop with the President of the United States, who supposedly they cover. What? So again, it's probably not a bad thing in that, just so everybody knows, right? Any premise of objectivity, you can pretty much chuck out the window. And it's good that it's out there in the open, right? And again, they're not doing anything different than their left-wing counterparts are doing. It's all the same gooey bunch of garbage to grab ratings. There's no loyalty to the truth. The truth is only pursued when it fits your agenda. And that is the way the media is now. I just want to say those are glaring examples, things that most people that are affiliated with the news, that do news commentary, tend not to do. And so, interesting stuff. As bad as that, yesterday morning I read, and again, my lament for no Charles Krauthammer, no McNeil Lear, no no Tim Russert. Yesterday morning, I read a little blurb after I got off the air that said, Chuck Todd, NBC News dude, right, and moderator of Meet the Press, said that early results showed that everywhere the President of the United States has gone, that candidate is losing. And so then you watch the returns come in. Right? And and it's not that way. And it's just like, are you kidding me? So it's just, it's not like, and Chuck Todd's supposed to be a news guy. Okay? He's supposed to be a news guy. And it's not even close to being something that that I think corresponds to what the news is. So it was interesting to you know the you know you have people that comment on the news. They're appearing with the president. What? At a rally? What? Don't see that very often. You have a guy who's NBC's news guy who's just so right adamantly opposed to the president, which. He's entitled to his personal opinion, but he's a news guy. He's a newsy, right? He's supposed to report news, and he's a commentator throughout, right? And so, I don't know. Maybe he should wear a sign, right? Am I being a news? Because it's just so, in my opinion, so gross and disgusting. And let me tell you, I've wrestled with this my whole life. Okay, people that are reporters who really aren't reporters. Okay, and I used to see it the first time. This is kind of funny, actually. The first time it ever happened to me, I was 9 years old. 1967. I might have been eight. Might have been the year before. It might have been 1966. I went on a road trip with my dad, who was managing the Birmingham A's in the Southern League, right, in minor league baseball. I was a Civil War, like, I read about the Civil War. And I had my first, I had the book I had maps in it with all these figures drawn on. It's called The American Civil War. I still have the book behind me in my bookcase. And I used to look at that. I used to look at all the little figures, and they'd paint this big map on both pages, right? It was probably 8.5 by 11 pages. And so, you know, you have a fairly decent-sized map. And they would get in there, and they'd paint formations and blah, blah, blah. And you'd see the terrain, and you could kind of understand the battle. Yeah. Well, yeah. So anyway, I used to read about history and the Civil War. It's always been an interest and a love of mine. So my mom essentially makes my dad take me on a road trip when the Birmingham A's went to play the Montgomery Tigers. Montgomery, the secondary capital of the Confederate States of America. They had a museum there. I think it might have been the only historical thing my dad ever took me to in my life. And so we went to, and I was all geeked up for it. Yeah, so we go. And so when I came home, the writer who covered the baseball team wrote a story about me going on the road trip. And at the end of the story, he said, when young McNamara got home, he looked at his mom and said, "I'm not even tired," in quotes. And I remember reading the story, and I looked at my mom, and I said, "I never said that, Mom." And she just looked at me, and she said, "Yeah, he just made it up to make the article sound better." And I remember saying to my mom, this is my good Catholic school education, "But Mom, if he puts it in quotes, doesn't it mean that I said that?" And she looked at me and she said, as my mom's smoking her Parliaments, "It's supposed to, but sometimes they lie." And I remember, I was 9 years old, maybe 9 or 10, 9 and a half. I was like, whew. Then I saw my dad get drugged through the streets of Boston. By the way, my dad's pitching coach, who's connected to this story, passed away, Bill Fisher, former Marine, played sports with the, on all Marine teams, back in the '50s when that was a big deal. And, he's my dad's pitching coach. But anyway, my dad manages the Boston Red Sox during the 1986 World Series when the ball goes through Bill Buckner's legs and all of that occurs, right? So, anywho, the truth of that story is Clemens, in the seventh inning, says, "Hey, you need to bring in the relief pitcher in between innings." Bill Fisher's there, standing with my dad. Fisher actually goes into the dugout and says, "And the Red Sox are winning 5-3, and Clemens is cruising. Roger Clemens, who will win the Cy Young and be the American League MVP." I think he's 25 years old at the time, young guy. So anyway, my dad comes, Bill Fisher comes up in the dugout. Roger Clemens is sitting in a tunnel and says, "Hey, you need it. Roger wants to talk to you." "Okay." Down in the tunnel. "What's going on?" "What's up?" "Hey, you need to bring in Calvin. I'm out of gas and I'm fighting a cold and I'm starting to get a blister." "Are you sure?" "Yep." "Bring in Schiraldi and the Red Sox lose the World Series, right?" So my dad gets drugged through the street for losing the World Series because he took out Roger Clemens. Clemens denies. Then Clemens denies that he ever said that. And I remember talking to Bill Fisher about it, and he said he won't admit it. I said, "Well, why don't you say something?" And he wins. He's like, "I don't really want to get into it, you know, Roger," and blah, 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 blah. And so anyway, so then I watch guys like Peter Gammons, very prominent baseball writer, just annihilate my dad. And you know the truth, right? And I didn't hear the truth like 2 weeks later, like after the game, as I've done, and I've told the story before, but after the game, as I've done since I was a little kid, talk to my dad about it. "Hey, what happened here? Hey, what happened there? Why did you take Clemens out?" "I didn't take Clemens out." "What happened?" "He took himself out. He told me he was running out of gas, and he was starting to get a finger, a blister on his right index finger." I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." And the rest is history. But you watch it, and you see people not report the truth. And then I get you know, then I get involved in politics in a town of 70,000 people running for city council, and then I ran for mayor. And in small town journalism, you see it, and you're sitting there going, he knows it's not true, and he's writing it anyway. So I find it honestly amazing, you know, when you see people in these kind of positions that don't seem to be welded to the truth, that they somehow or other want to it seems like they want to influence the message. And I think one of the things that's most wrong with our country. But in terms of the business model, the way news exists today, it's not going to change. It's not going to change until we turn it off and their ratings go through the floor. And then somebody starts something that is quality news, that is emblematic of Tim Russert, the McNeil Lear Report, things like that. And that thing puts up big numbers. So, and will that ever happen? I don't know. Because you don't see a program like the one Tim Russert hosted. Not on TV anymore. McNeil Lear NewsHour? You got to look long and hard to find something like that. And I don't think that exists either in terms of the quality. So, anyway. So, good morning to you. We'll open up the show. Waiting for the principals to speak, because I'm curious to what they have to say. Historically, and we're going to look at history here, what I want to do is I want to frame what happened relative to the election historically. Was it better or worse than most midterm elections? What are the averages? Is it for a president that had his approval rating, which is below 50%, you know, what did other presidents get with that kind of approval rating? And I know that's just one factor, but it's interesting to kind of put it in some kind of historical context. So so we'll do that. And then, wait, interestingly enough, right, Arizona is, the results of Arizona are not complete if you look at the, if you look at your election results meter. The results of Montana are not complete. And I think what is most interesting about those is the larger urban centers have normally report relatively quickly. Smaller, you know, rural areas, you know, in states like Montana, states like Arizona, they have to, a lot of times they have issues and they wind up having to drive ballots in and have them counted someplace else, blah, 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 blah. But, and those things tend to favor conservative candidates, right? Rural areas tend to. Not universally, but the Republicans right now, when you look at the Senate, they're plus 3, and with Mississippi undecided, Florida will go Republican, because the recount, and here's what happens in recounts. Recounts, errors on ballots tend to be symmetrical about the y-axis. Yeah, boom, a little statistical shit this early in the morning. How about that? What does that mean, Mac? What the hell? Exactly. What does that mean? What that means is when you look at error probability, it occurs along, it doesn't skew to one side, right? People make errors on across the spectrum, and so it tends to be 50-50 in terms of errors. So that would mean Florida would flip, that would mean Montana would flip, and Arizona would stay Republican, Jeff Flake's seat. So Martha McSally, Air Force veteran, running there. So interesting stuff. Texas, Beto O'Rourke, all the money he had. Texas, and I'll tell you what was interesting was that he made a race out of it in a state like Texas. So that was kind of interesting to watch a little bit. So there's still news to be made. I think Florida's done. Montana is pretty close. And so that sits right now is there's 2,000 votes separating Matt Rosendale and John Tester. Tester, the Democrat, Rosendale, the Republican. So kind of interesting, and that is with 95% of the vote. So when you get down to 5% of the vote left, mostly from rural areas, is that going to come in and skew to one candidate to the tune of 2,000 votes? Most of the time, no. And then the Arizona race, which is still called undecided. I'll just tell you where that sits in terms of percentage now. And this is weird. Arizona, 76% of the votes in. Right? Like, wait a minute. What is that? Like, where are 25% of the votes in Arizona? And why have they not been counted all night? The Russians. Exactly. I knew what you were thinking. Martha McSally is a percentage point ahead, which translates to about 16,000 votes. So, but that's still a large percentage that haven't been counted. So I guess Arizona will have to wait. But so what are we going to have? As we talked about 2 days ago, we're going to have a split house and all the fun that goes with that, which means nothing's going to get done. So in spite of all the bloviating, the campaign for the White House in 2020 begins today. Congratulations. So with all that said, good morning to you. We'll look at history. We'll pay attention to current events, so don't touch that dial. The United States Marine Corps Band makes it official the day after Election Day. Hope you voted. This is dedicated to everybody who voted, and if you didn't vote, I don't want to say shame on you, but you need to do better next time. You need to make it a point and vote, right? It's a serious event, and it's interestingly enough, I don't know that in my life, I don't know if in my life that I've ever seen, at least in my recollection, I don't know that I've ever seen a more heated midterm than the one we just witnessed. Yeah, I don't know. If there is one, I don't know that I remember that. Hold on. A friend of mine just asked me a question. Alan Maciel, who lives up in the Bay Area, yeah, He could really, really run fast. And he hit, when we were in high school, he hit like 800. Yeah, no kidding. Because he could run. He couldn't hit, but he could run. And he can still run. And he still can't hit. But he'd keep, but you know, if you can run, you, my uncle Jimmy could run. He played softball like into his like 80s. Yeah, like, Uncle Jim, what are you doing? I'm going up to Winnipeg to play in the World Softball Championships. What? Yeah. But, so Maceo just sent me a text.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my head.
That song is called The Monster.
With the voices inside of my head, you're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy, crazy.
I wanted to paint.
He went to a public school, right, which obviously has affected his memory. But we love him, right, because he's fun. Al's a fun guy. He was that guy. He was like he's a cool guy. Al's a good-looking guy, right? Used to wear short shorts in the 70s. You see pictures of it now, you're like, whoa, bro, what's up with that? The this is dedicated to everybody who voted yesterday. Well done. If you didn't vote, shake yourself.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Dow is up over 200 points. Yeah. The market's like gridlock. Nothing going on. They got what they want. The president keeps doing his assault on regulation. They'll be happy. So they got 2 years of predictability, which is what they like. We'll check the weather right now. Interesting night. All right, so we're going to see in the next half hour, what I want to do is take a look at history. So did the Democrats and Republicans perform above or below the historical line, all right, in the context of midterm election? So take a look at that just as a way to frame things for you. Currently, Quantico, Virginia, cloudy and 57 degrees. Camp Lejeune, partly sunny and 74 right now. Granbury, Texas, clouds and 61. Talked to the gunner last night. He was at some election event, fired up. Sunny and 58 degrees and 29 Palms. Cooler temperatures this time of year. Cooler earlier in 29 Palms this year. Cloudy and 59 at Camp Pendleton right now. Okinawa, this is your typical Okinawa forecast in the winter. Dark, cloudy, 74. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, it is dark, cloudy, and 65 degrees. Iraq and Afghanistan, both very similar climates. As the desert in 29 Palms. Yeah. They dry heat and gets cool in the winter, rain, not that much, but you get some. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, clear, dark, and 61 degrees. And at the Costa Mesa, in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, cloudy and 65 degrees. Looking for a high today of 69 degrees, 78 tomorrow. Tomorrow, exactly. I don't know which one of my kids used to say that, but one of them did. And then on Friday, 82 degrees. Don't forget, if you're in the Mankato, Minnesota area, or in the Twin Cities and you want to drive to Mankato, I speak there tomorrow night on the subject of post-traumatic learning. Fired up about it. So, Mitch McConnell speaking right now. Stand by.
Commentary on the president's observations out on the campaign trail.
Okay, yes, can you give me your views on those two issues?
It's an interesting...
Hold on, let me just rewind this, and I'll play them in their entirety. Okay, so I can do that now. Technology allows such things. Mitch McConnell at a podium somewhere. I think I'd be pretty happy. But I am going to rewind his comments so you'll hear them in their entirety. We'll hear the president when he lights off his blowtorch on the first day of the 2020 election, so he ought to be more than amusing. The all right, so Mitch McConnell, stand by. It's called on-air producing, okay? I had it all teed up. It's the way it always works, man. You just get it ready, and then something updates itself and just screws you over so bad. It's ridiculous. Yeah, Mitch McConnell ought to be one of the happier people on the planet today. Because I don't know that the Senate could have, the races across the country for the Senate could have gone a whole lot better than they did for him. So, with all that stalling, here's Mitch McConnell.
It is indeed a good morning for Senate Republicans. Over the course of the last, first last night and then this morning, I talked to Leader Pelosi. We discussed ways we might be able to find a way forward. She and I actually have had an opportunity to work together for a number of years when we were both on the Appropriations Committee. She had the Foreign Operations Subcommittee, and so did I. And so we're not unfamiliar with each other, and we'll probably have a lot more dealings with each other in the future. In looking at the race, I want to thank the President. He was extremely helpful to us in states where he is in excellent shape. He worked very hard and drew large crowds, and I think it clearly had a positive impact on the outcome. So with that, let me just throw it open and see what you'd like to talk about. Yes, ma'am.
Peter McConnell, do you agree with the President's campaign rhetoric that the caravan is an invasion and that birthright citizenship should be dealt with at the presidential level?
Yeah, I'd be happy to give my own views on whatever you'd like to talk about, but I generally don't do a running commentary on the President's observations out on the campaign trail.
Okay, yes, but can you give me your views on those two issues? Is the caravan
it's an interesting legal question. That ultimately I
like that, right? I usually don't do a running commentary about the president out on the campaign trail. You know what? It's an exercise in self-discipline. Don't see it very often. How about that?
Then would be solved in the courts. Yeah.
The president said on the White House driveway last week that he would be willing to work with and compromise with Nancy Pelosi if she becomes the House Speaker. What do you believe are now the top legislative priorities with the divided rule?
Well, first, we have to finish this session, and we have a number of items extant. We have to finish the farm bill. We have to finish funding the government. The one issue that Leader Pelosi and I discussed this morning is where there could be a possible bipartisan agreement would be something on infrastructure. Look, there'll be a lot of other things. I think I'm not putting you all down, but when we do things together, it almost never makes any news.
I'm not putting you down, right? That's a preparatory command for, that's the warning for, I'm about to put you down, okay?
Yeah, even in this current situation where we have Republicans in control of all three branches, I have a long list here of things we did on a bipartisan basis, from water infrastructure, the best appropriations process in 20 years, airport infrastructure, FDA authorization, on and on and on. I mean, there are plenty of things that we work together on, and I always have to tell constituents who think we all hate each other that the Senate's a pretty collegial place, and even though we had obviously big differences over things like taxes and judges, there were plenty of other things we did together, and there's no reason that would stop simply because the House now becomes Democratic.
But other than infrastructure, what big issues are there?
Well, we'll see. Drugs. We'll see. I mean, we'll see. That will all be discussed. Yeah.
So, will you insist on getting $5 billion for the president's border wall in this upcoming spending
bill? Well, we're certainly going to try to help the president achieve what he'd like to do with regard to the wall and border security. And that'll obviously have to be done on some kind of bipartisan, some kind of bipartisan discussion. Yeah.
Any observations on the Kavanaugh effect?
Very helpful. Yeah, I think the Republican sort of core voters in the states that were critical to us were highly offended by the questioning of the presumption of innocence and the tactics. And I think it was like an adrenaline shot. We were worried about lack of intensity on our side, and I think the Kavanaugh fight certainly provided that and was extremely helpful. It's noteworthy that the one Democrat in a red state who survived voted for Kavanaugh, Joe Manchin.
You credited the president for his work with Democrats and red states, but you obviously lost the House last night, too. So I'm wondering what kind of impact do you think the president's rhetoric in the last couple of weeks having on your party, particularly with women voters and suburban voters and some of those key races?
Yeah, I'm going to try not to have us waste our time on sort of routine questions about what the president may say at any given moment. I'm here to talk about the Senate. We had a very good day. Proud of what happened. The president was very helpful to us. Yeah.
Leader McCall, if you look at the exit polls, one of the most important issues to voters was health care.
One of the interesting things is the question of and this, I think, goes to the bias of the reporter. And the last question, in my opinion, is kind of indicative of it. The Senate goes like if everything goes right for us, we'll be here. That's essentially what happened. Right? The House, and we'll talk about where the House is historically in terms of that. Right? And then the last reporter, right, the question belies the article that's going to be written about how Trump's rhetoric alienates women voters. So how do you explain that the rhetoric, you know, is positive in the Senate and is negative in the House? How do you split that? Isn't there a different story to be written there, right? About, okay, let's dissect this. In the seats that got lost, you know, how had they voted previously? How did they vote in the last election? Build some kind of historical case for what happened, right? And then when you see the history, right, then you can begin to look for the footnotes, the whys. And so I've talked about this before in this that. I just mentioned it the other day, that Project Veritas guy, I don't like it, but he does attempt to pull the curtain back on this part of the media. And this part of the media is this. Okay, I need Trump stories. All right? I need overheated Trump stories. Everybody got it? Got it, boss. All right, go out there and do good things. So I'm going to write an overheated Trump story. Right? I'm going to link that which is probably not linkable to him. I'm going to link it to him anyway. I'll find a way to link it to him. It's not hard, right? And boom, my story is getting the clicks that I need to get a raise, to do better, to become a senior writer, right? That's the icky part of this business. And again, it's what I think our challenge as consumers of news to find places that do quality reporting, people that give you the full picture, and that don't do what Chuck Todd did yesterday, which is every race that he's participated in looks like he's costing those candidates the election. And then by the end of the evening, you look at a guy like Chuck Todd and you're like, why would you do that? You know, it's as unprofessional. It's as unprofessional as hopping on stage when you're a news commentator with the President of the United States. All right. I interrupted Mitch McConnell. Sorry, Mitch, bro.
Take away from that the message that any effort to repeal ACA at this point is dead?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious the Democratic House is not going to be interested in that. There are serious problems with Obamacare, serious problems that need to get fixed. They raised the phony issue of whether or not we were for or against pre-existing conditions. And I suspect it may have worked some places, fortunately, in our races, even though they tried to define health care on that issue. I think all of our candidates who subsequently won were able to make clear to the voters that everybody we knew was in favor of covering pre-existing conditions, including the candidates like Hawley and Braun and others. So the rhetoric doesn't solve the problem. And there are serious problems with Obamacare, and I think we're going to have to obviously now try to address that on a bipartisan basis.
Neil McConnell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Both Leader Pelosi and the President talked about fighting high prescription drug prices. Do you think mm-hmm. that that's something the Senate could work with Pelosi at, on?
Yeah, I can't imagine that that won't be on the agenda.
Neil McConnell.
Yeah.
Is there anything that the Senate Republicans could or would do to help President Trump in the event that Democrats in the House attempt to seize his tax returns?
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing.
What would Senate Republicans do in the event that the House Democrats try to obtain President Trump's tax records?
Well, you know, the whole issue of presidential harassment is interesting. I remember when we tried it in the late 90s. We impeached President Clinton. His numbers went up and ours went down, and we underperformed in the next election. So the Democrats in the House will have to decide just how much presidential harassment they think is good strategy. I'm not so sure it'll work for them.
Yeah. So just to go back to that, are you recommending that for House Democrats that the oversight that they have said that they're going to do might backfire on them? Are you saying that they...
They're not interested in my recommendations. All I'm doing is making a historical observation that the business of presidential harassment, which we were deeply engaged in the late 90s, improved the president's approval rating and tanked ours. Thus, my observation that that might not be a smart strategy, but it's up to them to decide how they want to handle that.
Senator McConnell.
All the way in the back.
Is there anything that you're going to be doing in the coming months to increase the number of women who...
Obviously, the Senate Majority Leader is in a good mood, did well, is better than I think anybody expected last night, although results in Arizona and Montana are still coming in. He's holding a press conference here talking about the results of the election.
We're being recruited on the Republican.
And you'll hear Nancy Pelosi, if she decides to speak this morning. And also the president at some point is supposed to speak. So been an interesting morning on the back side of the election.
It's been a frustration. I think I've mentioned to you before that we've had plenty of women candidates. A lot of them have not won. Marsha Blackburn won. We're hopeful that Martha McSally will win. I'm going to be trying to convince one of our women, for example, to go on the Judiciary Committee, something I've tried and failed the last couple of Congresses. We need to do a better job of recruiting women candidates and getting them elected. Hopefully, we'll have two new women Republican senators here shortly.
Senator?
Yeah.
Talking about the House oversight that is likely to come, the President tweeted this morning saying that if the House continues with their investigations, that we will likewise be forced to consider investigating them for all the leaks of classified information and much else at the Senate level. Two can play at that game. Can you respond to that? What do you think about that?
Well, I'd like to focus on finishing up this session. We've got work left to do, and we'll see what happens next year. Yeah.
Have you had discussions with the President about any of that? I know you're trying to avoid that right now, but...
Yeah.
On this session, can you rule out a government shutdown?
Yeah, hopefully that will, you know, look, we need to work this out. We had the most successful appropriations process already in 20 years. 75% of the government got funded before the end of September. And we all know we need to work together here toward the end to finish that up. And we're going to do the best we can to try to achieve the president's priorities. And hopefully we'll not be headed down that path.
Senator McConnell?
Yeah.
What do you think of doing a DACA fix, either lame duck or next year?
The what?
DACA fix.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I can't imagine with all the things that we have to do here to wrap up this Congress that we would revisit immigration, but who knows?
What about next year?
It's on the agenda every year because we have serious immigration issues. I would remind all of you all, the Democrats had total control of the government in 2009 and 2010 and never dealt with the immigration issue. So It seems that no matter who's up or who's down, we have not been able to come to some kind of conclusion about what to do on immigration. The one thing I thought we all agreed on was this border security issue. Most Democrats voted for it 10 years ago. But we've had a challenge on that as well, as evidenced by the president's desire to build a wall and the reluctance on the other side to support it. So I can't imagine we'll do anything beyond trying to deal with this funding issue on the wall here in the, at the end of the session.
Senator McConnell.
But I'd like just to follow up on that. The president had made a real issue out of it going to the midterms about the migrant caravan and the crisis that it was causing the border. Mm-hmm. Would you want to put immigration at the top of the list? Do you agree with the characterization the president used, that it was a crisis from this migrant caravan that's coming?
Well, that's sort of an executive branch issue about what, you know, how to deploy security forces to deal with that. I'm sure the president will handle it skillfully.
You believe
there
was a crisis?
It's not a legislative issue. It's a question of how you want to deal with the security at the border. The president has wide latitude to do that, and he's taking advantage of the opportunities he has.
Yeah. Senator McConnell, if Democrats do engage in aggressive oversight of the Trump administration, how will that impede your ability to work on a bipartisan fashion with Nancy Pelosi?
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
If Democrats do engage in the House in aggressive oversight of the Trump administration, would that impede at all your...
I love people that can't hear. It makes me not feel so bad. Pardon me? Yeah. Just for the record, all of us that are hearing challenged. Oh, by the way, my from the state of California, my girl Dianne Feinstein, who I voted for yesterday, yeah, she got reelected. Mm-hmm. Fired up that she'll be a senator when she's 90. It's Dianne. That's her name. Okay. Here, put your hat on. Here's your purse. Okay, go with that guy. He's going to take you to where you go every day. All right.
Ability to work with a possible Speaker Pelosi on things like infrastructure?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Senator, on health care, if the judge in Texas rules to strike down all or part of Obamacare, how do you think Senate Republicans might respond to that?
If what?
If the judge in Texas strikes down all or part of Obamacare?
Well, look, the health care system is still a pretty big mess. And
Obamacare is going to fail on its own, right, if it's not rescued.
It's obviously now going to have to be addressed on a bipartisan basis, because the Democrats will control the House. And I don't think anybody's satisfied with the status quo. And the American people have given us divided government, which they've given us most of the time since World War II. They seem to like divided government. And I think the message is, figure out what you can do together and do it. And I think health care is still a crisis and needs to be fixed.
I don't know if that's the message. Figure out. The American people aren't stupid. Well, some of them are. But it by fiat, it is mixed. It's not mixed by design. Although it is kind of interesting to see in some states where a Republican running for state office wins overwhelmingly, and then another candidate running for federal office, right? So there are going to be statewide elections, which is my point. Doesn't garner the same percentage, so people aren't voting the ticket, right? They're like, yeah, I'm going to vote for him for governor, but I'm going to vote different party for senator. Kind of interesting, as people split tickets. But I don't know that they don't do that saying, yeah, this will be the best permutation to get something done in Washington. I just like that guy better than that guy. And it is what it is.
Yeah.
Senator McConnell continues in between my commentary. All right, Mitch, take it away.
Dems push to expand Russia probes. Do you think this is an effort to undermine the president? And is there potential to get out in front of the special counsel on this?
Look, on the Senate side, the Senate Intelligence Committee has been looking at that issue. And we expect them to report at some point in the future. And I look forward. And so far, they've operated on a pretty bipartisan basis, Senator Burr, Senator Warner, and look forward to hearing what they have to say.
Senator McConnell.
Have you spoken to Governor Scott or Congresswoman McSally about their races, and how do you feel about their state?
Well, Governor Scott and I traded calls last night, so I'm not actually connected with him yet. I'm going to be talking to him shortly. And I have not spoken to Martha McSally, although we traded calls, too. They were pretty late at night. I decided to go to bed and talk to her this morning.
Yeah. You're going to have an extra cushion in the Senate with extra seats on the Republican side. What will that enable you to do? Will this ease judicial nominations? What's the practical effect of all this?
Well, you know what my top priority is. I've made it very clear. It's the judiciary, the two Supreme Court appointments, the 29 circuit judges, the 84 overall number of judges, and we're not through doing those this year. The president, I think, has done an excellent job in picking young men and women who believe the job of the judge is to follow the law, and we intend to keep confirming as many as we possibly can for as long as we're in a position to do it. So it'll still be my top priority in setting the agenda here in the Senate, next Congress as well. Yeah.
Senator, will you revisit your mark in the new Congress, and then a lot was made of your comments about entitlement in the last couple of weeks. Are entitlements an option?
The Democrats have made it perfectly clear they're not interested in dealing with entitlements, and they're in a position to say no, and so I don't think that'll be on the agenda.
But your mark, sir?
I had no idea. I hadn't really thought about that. We've got a conference rule related to earmarks on the Senate side. I can't imagine that's going to change. Yeah.
Will a 10% middle class tax cut be on your agenda next Congress?
Well, any effort on the tax side would clearly have to be negotiated now on a bipartisan basis. And we'll just have to see what, I assume Nancy will be Speaker, we'll have to see what they want to do in this area. We'd have to do it together. We wouldn't have the possibility of doing it on a party line basis like we did in this Congress.
McConnell, yeah. On some of the changes in the administration, in the cabinet, mm-hmm. that are expected, can you just give your view of what the confirmation battle, you know, ground might look like? I mean, are you confident that you could, if there was a vacancy, let's say, at the Department of Justice, could you easily do that? Would it eat up valuable time?
Well, I think we'll have probably more time for nominations in the next Congress than we've had in this one, because the areas of legislative agreement will be more limited, I think, obviously, between a Democratic House and a Republican Senate. I don't think we'll have any trouble finding time to do nominations. How controversial they are depends upon who it is. And the president makes that decision, and then we have to react to it. But he signaled that there's likely to be a number of changes, and we'll process them.
Would you be comfortable with sessions being in place?
It's not up to me, Manu, to tell the president who to put in the cabinet. They serve at his pleasure. And if he makes changes, we'll be dealing with whoever is sent up.
Peter McConnell.
Yeah.
Presidential election about to be starting soon. Some Democrats are probably going to be announcing or testing the waters next couple of months.
Really?
What impact do you believe that will have, and also the president's coming re-election? What do you think that will have?
Well, it's going to be fun to watch the Democratic presidential aspirants, of which we have a number in the Senate, and Chuck may have some attendance problems from time to time, but it'll be interesting to watch.
Peter McConnell, do you plan on running for re-election?
I do.
You do?
I do.
And are you confident that President Trump will support your re-election?
I'm sorry?
Are you confident that President Trump will support your re-election?
I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, well, thanks a lot, everybody.
There you have it. That is Senator Mitch McConnell. Talking on a day after the Senate did pretty well on the Republican side. House, not so much. Where does that shake out, though, historically? So we're going to get to that next in terms of framing it. I thought it was interesting yesterday, James Carville, who's pretty outspoken, raw guy, yesterday said that there was going to be yesterday, I think, I want to say in the morning, said there was going to be no blue wave yesterday, which I thought was interesting because, I mean, much anticipated what would happen. And so, and then with the echoes of 2016, right, when media forecasting a number of races by virtue of their track, their polls, their pre-election polls, were wrong. And so, so pretty interesting stuff. Anyway, President's supposed to speak in about 30 minutes, so we'll get his. What does this mean for the Department of Defense? I think when you heard, I don't know, about a month ago, I want to say I heard something that the Commandant said about budgets in the future. And, you know, in terms of programs and things like that, are you confident that you'll be able to sustain this this kind of spending, which to be honest with you, the DOD needed. And again, what the DOD is trying to do is the military just wore their stuff out over the course of all the operational commitments that it's had since 2001. Okay, just wore stuff that out that wasn't supposed to be used like that, and a variety of reasons. And so, so what's happening is really the entire aviation component of the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Air Force is being reworked. That's not a small job. Things that were supposed to supplant that transition or make that transition easier simply got worn out to the extent that the parts pipelines for those aircraft are gone, right? And that's when you see the stories of they went to a museum to find a part that they think is in this aircraft. And those are no shit stories either. As maintenance guys and girls try to keep aircraft up around the world. That's what the DOD is going through. So the capital injection it got was not just, oh, they're bloated budget, they're pissing away. No. We need more ships. We need more amphibious ships. The Marine Corps does anyway. We need the aviation component to get back to what it used to be. And so so all that important. But the Commandant's comments were, hey, well, we're in a pretty uncertain budget time. Is this budget going to be followed up by a budget next year that's going to be drastically cut? So we don't know that yet. So we're kind of keeping our cards close to the vest. We're planning program spending. But when you live in this kind of budget uncertainty, and maybe we'll go back to sequestration next year, which will mean cuts across the board, then we're not sure, you know, the footing's not firm. So, all right, we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Carter Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nelson. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Carter Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope.
10 minutes after 8. On a Wednesday. Email divided we stand ? People like divided government. No, they don't! I want the whole enchilada, all three branches, but I realized a long time ago it makes no difference. When either party quote unquote rules, they taste that power and forget their principles. A little cynical, maybe, you think? A little bit. Let me tell you, that's the sentiment that got, you know, how did Donald Trump get elected? Pissed off people that looked at Hillary Clinton and said, I'm not voting for her. I'd rather roll the dice with him than vote for her. Yeah, and so you're going to get more of the same. And it's even interesting, you know, Senator McConnell said, what, 2009-10? The Democrats controlled the presidency, the House, and the Senate, and didn't do anything at a time when they were supportive of border security. They didn't do anything about it. So you could see Wall Street likes it, though. Yeah, Wall Street responds positively to, you know, we're not going left or right. We're going fractions to the left or right, because that's all we can agree on. I'll tell you what, one of the things that will be interesting, though, a lot of Democrats that got elected, you know, I think the people that sucked the air out of the room, that girl in New York City, Octavio, I can't remember her last name, she, you know, right, she all over the news, and her little socialist agenda. Nobody's signing up for that, though, right? So she'll be an anomaly, and nobody's going to get elected nationally that flies that flag. So, and again, you saw people attempt to run, maybe a little bit to the right of her, both in Atlanta in the governor's race and in Florida in the governor's race, and both have lost. And both were charismatic people, had celebrities, President Obama coming down, Oprah coming in, right? And voters aren't going to go that far to the left. So what's going to be interesting is what 30-something members now have said, I don't want Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House, right? And they've run like the former Marine. And again, former, don't send me, quit sending me email when I say former Marine. How do I refer to a guy who's no longer on active duty? Yes, somebody give me the appropriate term. Here's a quiz for all you smart people out there. Give me the appropriate term to reference a Marine that is no longer on active duty. Like the guy who ran in Pennsylvania in the special election that was a dino, right? He's Democrat in name only. Every position you see him take is a conservative position, but he's a Democrat. So how do they deal with them? So it'll be interesting. So she will have her hands full. So it'll be interesting to see that. Now, I want to talk a little bit of history. Okay. Yeah, there was more than a few that ran like that. So I want to go through recent history, and then I want to go through a little bit of information that I've got from Gallup relative to presidential ratings. And again, somebody said, Mac, where do you get your information about recounts? If you look at recounts historically, most notably in Florida, the damaged and the mistakes that get made and what gets rectified tends to split 50-50. So I know it's with great fanfare that people say there's going to be a recount. Recounts, the errors, 50-50. So it does not change the results. So, Mac, I'm on the road. Update in Montana. Update in Arizona. The latest news that I see, 95% of the vote in Montana. And Matt Rosendale, that number hasn't moved since earlier this morning. And also in Arizona, which befuddles me. It's stuck on 75% of the vote. Is that right? So, let me check another Arizona election results. Let's see if somebody has something different. Yeah, it said 75%. This is New York Times, right? 99% reporting. Martha McSally, Republican. 49.3%. And Kristen Sinema, 84.4%. The difference is 16,000 vote difference. So I think that one is pretty. So there's an update for you. Let me see if the New York Times has Montana. Are you a subscriber? No, I'm not. I don't want to subscribe. I just want to use your numbers for a minute. Stop it. Zero articles remaining this month. Okay. Now, the New York Times thinks they've defeated me, right? That's wrong, because I run into this problem on occasion because I read the news. So what do? You have another browser. In this case, I don't know, what is this one? You copy and paste the link into the other browser. Oh, New York Times. Too bad. Just got smoked by Mac. That's right. Montana. 86% of precincts reporting in Montana. They're trucking them in from the farm. And, again, the difference? Almost 2,000 votes. That's pretty close. That's pretty close. But, again, you're not going to see a 2,000-vote swing in a recount. Not going to happen. So, if you get it to less than 1,000, maybe. But even that, dicey. So, especially in a state that's as sparsely populated as Montana. 400 and, let's see, 405, 6. $418,000 votes counted in Montana so far. So, Montana undecided. Florida's done. All right, Florida's done. There is a 34,000 vote. Ain't happening there. Sorry, folks. So, the question is Montana. So, there you have that. All right. Here's what I want to talk about historically. So, did a little research this morning. Where does this, so it's specifically the House. All right. Big movement in the House. Just a little bit of history, right? 4 years ago, President Obama lost 13 seats, right? 2 years before that, 4 years before that, in 2010, right? Barack Obama, new president, new era, new day. He lost 63 seats in the House. That's right. Remember that? That's what you call a virtual bloodbath. George Bush in 2006, right, lost 30 seats. In 2002, George Bush gained 6 seats. In 1998, Bill Clinton gained. Yeah, I said gained. Gained 5 seats. They are anomalies, my friends. They are anomalies. Now, Clinton, in his first midterm, lost 53. George Herbert Walker Bush, in 1990, he lost 8 seats. Actually, that's pretty good, right? Ronald Reagan, in his second term, right, midterm election, lost 5. Reagan doing pretty good. Reagan, in his first midterm, lost 28. Jimmy Carter lost 11. Gerald Ford lost 43. Richard Nixon, 1970, lost 12. Lyndon Baines Johnson, known as LBJ, if you're from Texas, he lost 47 seats. John Kennedy lost 4 seats. Eisenhower lost 47 seats in his second term. He lost 18 in his first. Truman, so this all this is post-World War II. Truman lost 29 seats in his second. Truman lost 55 seats in his first midterm. Hey-yo. All right, so now if I take that and I do a custom sort of the database based on column D, which would be approval rating, and I pull out how did people do with similar approval ratings, right? So in the 40s, okay, which according to Gallup is where President Trump is, somewhere between 40 and 44%. All right, so here you have it. At 46% approval rating in 1994, President Clinton lost 53 seats. At 45% in 2010, President Obama lost 63 seats. At 44%, President Obama lost 13 seats. And President Johnson, at 44%, lost 47 seats. And at 42%, Ronald Reagan, 42%. How about that? The Gipper. Yeah, who knew? The Gipper. At 42%, he lost 28 seats. Now, right now, I want to say the count is 28. Okay, so let's go first term, similar approval rating, okay? That would be Obama in 2010. He loses 63. Let's see, Clinton in 94, he loses 53, similar approval rating. Johnson in 66, similar approval rating, he loses 47. Reagan, 82, loses 28. So, Trump outperforms all of them, except Reagan, right? So I think the count this morning is 28. The last I saw. So that gives you some kind of historical, framework. Let me do a little bit of historical trivia for you. I've mentioned this and I've quizzed people on this over the course of the last couple of days because I did not know these numbers myself, and I found them interesting. I digress, but that's the way it goes because it's my show. Okay, so when in terms of United States population relative to world ranking, where do you think we rank numerically? Okay, I've asked this to smart people that I know. Okay, Mac, how do you define smart? General officer in the Marine Corps, Naval Academy graduate, master's degree in business. And another human being, college graduate, that I would tell you moderately intelligent. Okay, nobody has got either one of these two questions right. One, so where does the United States rank numerically in terms of population? And I did this with Mike yesterday, but we're third in the world. Yeah, who knew? I didn't know. And I don't know, I was looking at American demographics, and I saw that, and I was like, whoa, did not know that. Pretty interesting. Okay? So, our standard of living. So, I mean, look, it'd be curious. What percentage of the Chinese population lives in abject poverty? Like, when I say poverty, I mean, like, lives in the 1800s. Hold on. Lives in poverty. So we're talking about like Chinese poverty. That's not like American poverty. According to the World Bank, more than 500 million people were lifted out of extreme poverty as China's poverty rate fell from 88% in 1981 to 6.5% in 2012, as measured by a percentage of people living on the equivalent of U.S. $1.90 a day or less in 2011 purchasing price parity terms. So if you're above that, you're middle class in China. Yeah. 88% of Chinese fell into that in 1981. Now, only 6.5% of the Chinese fall below. They live on $1.90 a day. Yay! Yeah. So in terms of a large population that has a relatively small poverty rate, the United States crushes it. Yeah, I did not know that we were third. Okay. Next, demographics in the United States. I was looking at some kind of statistic, and it was like race versus ethnic origin. And what puzzled me was the whole Hispanic thing. While race and ethnicity share an ideology of common ancestry, they differ in several ways. First of all, race is primarily unitary. What does that mean? You can identify ethnically as Irish or Polish, but you have to be essentially white or black. The fundamental difference in that race is socially imposed and hierarchical. How you define race as opposed to ethnicity? Here's another definition. Race and ethnicity defined. The term race refers to groups of people who have differences and similarities in biological traits deemed by society to be socially significant, meaning that people treat other people differently because of them. So, that brings me to Hispanics. What race are Hispanics? This is somebody pointing out. I made the comment earlier that how fired up I was that Dianne Feinstein was going to be a senator at the age of 90. Text message. Great show today. I'll leave you with this to ponder. At our age, we still have 25 plus years to run for the Senate and still be younger than your girl, Diane. Yeah, I know. How fired up are we about that? All right. What race is Hispanic? Well, if you define Hispanic as Caucasian, Hispanic isn't a race. It's an ethnicity. Subgroup of, could be white, could be black, I guess. The U.S. Census Bureau defines the ethnonym, the ethnonym. I don't even know what this word is. Hold on. Let me look it up. I'll figure out how to pronounce it. We're studying history right now. History and statistics. Ethnonym. You know what's weird? I keep seeing 74% of the vote for Arizona, but the New York Times website says 99%. All right. An ethnonym is a name applied to a given ethnic group. Ethnonyms can be divided into two categories, exonyms and autonyms, or endonyms. As an example, the ethnonym for the ethnically dominant group in Germany is Germans. The ethnonym is an exonym used in English, but itself comes from Latin. All right, so an ethnonym is a word that describes an ethnicity. You didn't know that, did you? You can thank me later. All right, so the U.S. Census Bureau defines the ethnonym, word describing an ethnicity, there you have it, Hispanic or Latino to refer to a person of Cuban, Mexican, Puerto Rican, South or Central American, or other Spanish culture or origin, regardless of race, and states that Hispanics or Latinos can be of any race, any ancestry, or any ethnicity. That confused me. So when I was looking up, like, the, so then the appropriate way to, so then I looked up racial makeup of the United States. And this, that's when the whole Hispanic or Latino thing threw me, right? Because I used the word racial. As of July 2016, Americans, white Americans, are the racial majority in the United States. African Americans are the largest racial minority, okay, at 12.7%. But since Hispanics aren't a race, it's an ethnicity, people identify themselves as Hispanic are 17.8%. So the way it breaks down is whites are 72%. Hispanics are, all round up, 18%. And black Americans or African Americans. See, the whole nomenclature. Well, what if I'm not an African American? What if I'm black, but I came from the West Indies? I don't know. What do you want to be called? I don't really look. I don't have a dog in that fight. What do you want me to call you? You want to be called black? You want to be called African? I don't really care. But I don't want to insult you either. So what do you want? What do I say? So anyway, 13%. All right. So, the largest ethnic minority in the United States is Hispanic Latino, followed by African / Black American. So anyway, thought you just again just Mac looking at demographics, blah 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 blah. So where does that leave the where does all of that leave the president of the United States? Okay, well, where it leaves him is if he only gives up 28 seats, then he is performing in post-World War II at the top of presidents in their first term with a approval rating that is approximately between 40 and 50%. He's tied for first with Reagan. Okay, so again, like I said, interesting stuff. President is supposed to speak here in a few minutes, so we'll take that. The big question, though, is what does this mean for the Department of Defense? What does this mean for the Department of Defense? So the guy who's going to be the chairman of the House Armed Service Committee has said that budget's getting schwacked. Yeah, so... I think his name is Smith. House Armed Service Committee Minority Ranking Member. I think that's the way they refer to themselves. Did you mean House Armed Services Committee Minority Ranking Member? House Armed Service Committee, Democrats. Who are these guys? Adam Smith. There you have it. Yeah. Adam Smith's agenda supposedly schwacked that budget. So, film at 11. Ohio man admonished me the other day. Don't give up on the house so easily. Best website for tracking lectures is Real Clear Politics. Your bullshit call on Americans like the divided government is probably your most accurate statement on politics. No, I said the markets like Americans like government, divided government. And that was a quote from somebody else. That's not my quote. Ohio man admonished me not to give up on the house so quickly. If you look historically, I'll get back to this email. I looked at some other historical numbers. Again, to give context to it, okay? And again, what I find interesting is going to be the conundrum that the Democrats find themselves in. The people, the majority, you had some far liberals get elected, but a lot of them, right? They ran on a conservative, an old conservative Democrat kind of sort of ticket, right? And some of them won. Okay, how do they square with, you know, with Bernie Sanders? And then who do the Democrats run? Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton again? Because there's nobody else that's going to appeal to the swing voter, so. It is interesting. So I looked up control of the U.S. House and the House and Senate, and it goes back to 1855 to 1857. But I won't bore you with that, okay? What I will tell you is that from about 1895, the Republicans controlled Congress until the Depression. With the exception of about 6 years in there during World War One, all right, when the Democrats controlled both houses for a few years, the Republicans controlled both houses of government. You can draw a line to 1933, right? Then 1933-34, the election of FDR, and for a period from then until 1946, about. Democrats control both the House and the Senate. Republicans take back control in a very marginal way in 1947, I believe, as the graphs kind of screwed up in terms of number. The Democrats take it back very marginally. Republicans take it back for 2 years. And then you go through a period of Democratic control from about the time I was born, 1947, until the Democrats control both houses until approximately 1981, when Ronald Reagan shows up. The Republicans then control the Senate in a very marginal way, right? Again, which means the whole cloture thing. But the House is controlled by the Democrats until, 1994, when the Republicans take control of the House for about 12 years. The Democrats take it back in, 2007 to 2011, and then the Republicans take it back. But again, in a very marginal way. So the Senate has bounced back and forth on a more regular basis. From about 1980, the Republicans owned it very marginally for 6 years. Democrats owned it marginally for 8 years. Republicans, in the next 12 years, they own it for 10 years. Democrats take it back for 8 years, and then it flipped Republican, 4 years ago. So you see this back and forth. The Democrats, in my lifetime, though, owning both houses on a much more frequent basis than the Republicans have. So it just gives you an idea. And then divided, again, in my lifetime. So over the course of the last 60 years, for 26 and then another 8, that's 34, and then another 4 38 of my 60 years, the Democrats have controlled both houses of Congress. It's been split another 6, 10, it's been split another 10 years, and then the Republicans have controlled it for very fleeting times. So just interesting. So do Americans like split government? Institutions like it because nothing gets done and things tend to be stable. Our movements tend to be very, very, if we're headed north, they tend to be very, very shallow moves both to the east and the west. And that's what you get. So business likes that. So your bullshit call on Americans like divided government is probably your most accurate statement on politics. But it's not accurate, in my lifetime anyway. And I don't think that's, I don't think America's planned like that. I think it happens like that. Right? And Montanans will vote for a Republican governor, but for whatever reason, they like John Tester. So I think Montana, Ohio men are kind of saying the same thing. We saw that in Ohio last night. Republican governor won fairly easily, while Democratic senator named Sherrod Brown retained his seat in the Senate. He's a fairly popular and his Republican opponent, a congressman, is not as well known statewide and not all that likable. Pretty disappointing about losing the House, but stoked on gaining Senate seats. I have no doubt that Trump will invite some moderate House Dems to join his efforts. We will see how much authority Nancy wields. Going to be an interesting 2 years. You know, and again, remember Trump hanging out with Chuck and Nancy? Remember him saying things that angered the NRA after the thing at Douglas High School? Remember, he is a Manhattan Democrat. Years ago. He is morphed into something different. So I agree. It's going to be interesting. Let me tell you, they could make deals now if they wanted to relative to the Dreamers and border security. But the Democrats, even though they historically most of them have supported building a wall, and it's really funny to go back and listen to their old video and audio statements, they won't give him a victory on his signature issue, and that is the wall. Okay? So will they cooperate? Right? Now she can say, hey, look, to all you dreamers, this would not have happened without us. And he will say, hey, I built the wall. So we both have something to crow on. Do you think that common political ground, them each being able to claim victory, will promote some kind of increased border security? Not on your life. Not on your life. All right, so healthcare. What are we going to do? Listen to this. I think this is going to be fascinating, and I'll watch it. Discovery Channel, Greenlight's Border Live reality show, set at the U.S.-Mexico border. With the national debate focused on immigration, Discovery is heading to the U.S.-Mexico border for a timely live reality series called Border Live. Excuse me. The six-part multi-platform series, President's going to speak here in a few minutes, hosted by CNN anchor and special correspondent Bill Ware. Ugh, CNN, really? Come on. And investigative journalist Lilia Luciano is set to premiere December 5th at 9 p.m. on the Discovery Channel. The live weekly series will document the work of law enforcement on the U.S.-Mexico border, as well as real lives, real moments, and stories from those that live and work along its remote stretches. Ware will host from Discovery New York Bureau, tracking the action and stories as they unfold live from the border. In addition, Ware will engage with experts on border issues, offering insights. I think this is, depending on how they do it, this has a chance to be something very fascinating. Because my friends at work down there say, if you could see it, it would blow your vacuum tubes. So I'm curious that this whole immigration thing, right, since they can both declare victory, what does it mean? You know, will they cooperate? Answer, no, they won't. They won't. What about health care? Republicans couldn't do it on their own. Do you think Republicans and Democrats will cooperate to deliver health care? No, I don't. So, but it will be interesting to see what moderate Democrats who've been elected recently, right, what influence that they have on the debate. Because one would think, right, that they're going to skew to the conservative. Now, it'll be interesting to find out and how it all comes to market, but it'll be interesting as Ohio man said. So I'm interested, and I don't normally watch stuff like that. But I will give that Border Live show a view. And because I think when the reality of what goes on our border, we don't see it live. I mean, we see little sound bites. You know, it's really interesting when somebody follows a coyote, right? And you see live video, like, from those head camera things. You know, people, you know, what actually is going on down there and the reality of our southern border. And it just befuddles me why, for whatever reason, no matter who owns Congress, we can't seem to improve security down there so that immigration into the United States is a relatively orderly event. Okay? Because once you do that, then you can tackle the people that are inside here, the Dreamers and their parents. Now, Mac's solution, bipartisan type, I've rolled out for you before. But that is the Dreamers, they got yanked here, right? Give them a path to citizenship. Their parents, let them plead guilty to some kind of misdemeanor or lower felony. And as long as they stay, have a clean criminal record in this country, they have a legal status in the country. Not citizens, they have a legal status. And then let's get on with developing the country and other more important issues. But the reason the border security piece is the first piece of the whole thing is because we're not going to do this shit again. We're not doing this shit again. I think the president's right in terms of if you're going to claim asylum, you can only claim asylum at a port of entry. You cannot claim asylum if you're sneaking into the country. Okay? That dog doesn't hunt. So if you can restrict that flow down to a trickle, you know, which might be idealistic, but if you can reduce that flow, because we're not doing this again. And again, I don't. If I was down in Honduras, I'd have my ass coming in the United States. I would not want to live. I mean, who wouldn't? But I don't think that it's fair to the southern states in the country, to the taxpayers in the southwestern part of the country, that they have to pay additional taxes because the federal government can't control its border. As somebody who pays those taxes, yeah, who in a state that provides those services. And again, I don't blame the people coming, not one bit. But when the perception is there is no security on the border, it's porous, you can get through, just walk up there. I left a message for a friend of mine yesterday. Hey, if someone walks 1,600 miles to get here, hell, we should probably want that person as a citizen. That's a hell of a lot more than people sitting on their dead asses looking for a handout, you know, have done in this country. If they're walking 1,600 miles... I'm thinking they're not a sit-on-your-ass kind of person. Maybe they'll come here and work. Just a thought. All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, you'll hear, I think the President of the United States is getting ready to talk. So, don't touch that dial. More of Almering Radio coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.